We've been going through the book of 1 Peter, but we're not tonight. I was on vacation last week, and I was in New Jersey for a week with my older children at a home on the beach that's a group home was originally set up for single moms to bring kids very inexpensively down to the beach, and they have a pastor come in and give a couple devotions a day, and they also now have some family weeks, and we went on a family week. But I was the pastor, so I was doing Bible studies all week. And it's interesting because there's a mixed group of people that are there, all different types of backgrounds, Christian-wise. And I don't know. I talked to the guy. I felt bad because I met the outgoing pastor when I came in, and he's like, oh, yeah, he's like, I spent the whole week on John 3:16. Like, really? Like a whole week, like twice a day, the whole week on John 3. Say, oh, yeah, I had this and I had it all planned out. And he's like, what are you doing? Not sure, but I got a couple hours before we start, so I figure I'll have it by then. And because I was looking at different things, and I ultimately decided to, let's just talk about Jesus, because I really want people to think about who he is, maybe outside of the box a little bit. And so I decided to go to one of the things that I looked at this last week in looking at Jesus. So turn to John chapter 9, if you wouldn't mind. And I'll set the stage for you just a little bit because it all flows together. You have to understand really what happened in John chapter 8 to understand the exchange that's going to happen in John chapter 9. John chapter 8, Jesus had a verbal sparring match with the religious leaders. If you look at verse 37 of John chapter 8, he's speaking to them saying, I know that you're Abraham's seed, you're descendants of Abraham, but you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. I speak that which I've seen with my father, and you do that which you've seen with your father. Now, this is starting to get personal, just so you understand, because Jesus is saying, well, I've heard some stuff from my father, and you've heard some stuff from yours. And the implication is they're not the same father, okay? And they answered and said unto him, Abraham's our father. And Jesus said unto them, well, if you were Abraham's children, you'd do the works of Abraham. You'd be like him. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth, which I've heard of God. This did not Abraham. You do the deeds of your father. And so they take it up a notch, and they say to him, we be not born of fornication. Now that's a slam, right? Because you remember how Mary was found to be with child before she was married? So the religious leaders just basically took a shot at his mom and said that at least we know who our daddy is. And we have one father, even God. And Jesus says unto them, well, if God were your father, you'd love me, for I proceeded forth and came from God. Neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Why don't you understand my speech? Even because you can hear my word, you're of your father, the devil. So he's just been accused of being illegitimate, and he just called all them children of the devil. This is a religious leaders, right? So this is not a happy conversation that's going on. He said, the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, and there's no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own. He's a liar. He's a father of it. And it escalates a little more there with the whole Abraham thing, and it finally ends in verse 59. When it says they took up stones to cast at him, they want to kill him. He got them so enraged because then he told them that, you know, basically Abraham didn't do that. Abraham saw his day and rejoiced. And they're like, you're not even 50. You've seen Abraham. Abraham's been dead for, you know, 1,000 years. And then he says, before Abraham was, I am, claiming to be God the Father from the burning bush. They didn't miss that because they picked up rocks to kill him for blasphemy. But it says he hid himself. But notice, he hid himself and he went out of the temple going through the midst of them and so passed by. He didn't like dive under a bush or anything. He just did, you know, whatever it is Jesus can do. These are not the droids you're looking for. Just kind of the little mind trick. And just walked out through the middle of them because his time wasn't come. So that's just happened, okay? That has just happened. And we come to chapter 9. It says, and as Jesus passed by, he's leaving the temple precincts. It says, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. Now, in that culture, if you've got a handicap, you've got a disability, you can't earn a living, the only way that you can support yourself is to beg. And so this man was a beggar. He was born blind, had never seen his mother's face, never seen a sunset, never seen a rainbow, never seen anything, just never had known sight. It says, and as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from birth. This man would have been set up outside of the temple, because outside of a place where people are going to worship God is usually a pretty good place to ask for something. You know, you're going in to worship God and someone says, you know, alms for the poor, could you help the poor? What are you going to say? No, beat it, you know, and then go in and say, praise you, God. I mean, it's kind of tough to do those two things together. So it's a good place to ask for money. But he'd been there probably, you know, most of his life. And as such, he was a fixture of the place. The thing is, when you have somebody like that in a position like that, they tend to become part of the furniture of the place, right? They just are always there. Oh, yeah, I always see him. He's the one who's there begging or whatever. And as they're passing by, Jesus sees him. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Now, first off, understand, they're right there next to him, okay? And the disciples, in the earshot of this guy, say to Jesus, so whose fault is this anyways? Did he do something bad, or was it his parents that caused him to be born this way? To which, you know, he's got to be thinking, hello, you know, I'm right here. But I'm sure he's used to that, because he's just a fixture, because everybody sees him there, and they just take him for granted. Probably most people make a practice. You know how it is? It was a little different with this guy. But if you've ever been around somebody who's begging, it's almost like when you're driving. And like I was in a lot of traffic this last week coming back from New Jersey. And there's an unwritten rule. If you don't make eye contact with them, you don't have to let them in, right? If you pretend you don't see them trying to get in. And it's the same thing with someone begging. You know, if they're asking for something and you just happen to, oh, what is that over there? You know, and then I don't have to respond to them. Well, it's easier with a blind guy not to make eye contact, because he doesn't know if you're looking or not. But they want to know who's to blame. Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And I'm sure this is not the first time that question has been asked in this guy's earshot. Now, when you think about it, what could he have done to be born blind? Did he sin before he came out? I mean, my oldest daughter, when we were pregnant with my oldest daughter, well, I say we, my wife was pregnant, I just was along for the ride, but we had a double bed back then, and there were multiple nights where Aileen would jab me in the night, and I'd be like, what? She'd be like, it wasn't me. And it would be my daughter kicking me through my wife's stomach. I thought it was sinful, personally. But I don't. It's pretty tough to really sin in utero. But they were looking to affix blame, because they look at that and they say, that's not right. It's not right. When you see something like that, there has to be a cause. Because it isn't fair. It isn't right. When someone has a handicap, when somebody is having difficulty, it's just not right. Someone, we've got to assign blame. Right? It has to be that this guy has parents. Can't be God. Can't be God. Because God's good. And he would never allow anything bad like this to happen. So it's got to be somebody's fault. Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And I'm sure this guy has heard this multiple times. Because look, the Old Testament, Exodus 20, chapter 20, verse 4, in the Ten Commandments, it says, you shall not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that's in heaven above or the earth beneath, or it's in the water under the earth. You won't bow down to them yourself or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third or fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me. And so they're thinking, well, obviously, someone hated God back in this guy's family, and it must have been one of them that did something that caused him to be born blind. Because that's the only way it would work, is if God was getting him for somebody. And Jesus answers and says, neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents. No. No. You don't understand. No. No. It wasn't either one of them sinning that caused this. But that the works of God should be made manifest in him. This happened for this moment, is really what it was. He was allowed to be born blind for the rest of this chapter and for the power of this chapter, which has been read for 2,000 years since it was written. I will say this, and I've said it before, but you got to listen carefully. I do believe that bad stuff happening in the world is a result of sin. Not sins specific, not like, okay, someone did something bad, but sin in general. We know that sin and death entered the world through one man when Adam sinned, disobeyed God, and because of that, bad stuff happens. And it spills out. Sin has consequences. You can have a dad that's a drunk, and it affects the kids. It just does. But it isn't necessarily even a specific sin. And because this sin and this death, we know this is not our home. We like the disciples, we can look at that and say, it's just not right. It's not right. Something's not right. But the answer is not to find someone to affix the blame, because Jesus says it was neither. And if you've been told, by the way, that, well, the problem is, you know, probably some generational curse. You probably had some ancestor in the past that did something bad. You know, you had a Grammy that was a voodoo priestess, and now you've inherited, along with the lamp and the Afghan, you also got the family demons, and that's why you're having these problems. Because read Ezekiel chapter 18. Ezekiel 18, the word of the Lord came unto me again, saying, what mean you to use this proverb concerning the land of Israel, saying that the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge? You guys have this saying that your parents ate something sour and it's affected your kids' teeth. That's what he's saying. He says, as I live, saith the Lord God, you shall not have occasion anymore to use this proverb in Israel. Behold, all souls are mine. As the soul of the Father, so the soul of the Son. And then he goes on to explain, if you have a guy and he loves me and he serves me or whatever, then I'll see him as righteous before me. And if he has a son and that son is wicked, that son is going to be judged because of his wickedness. But if the wicked one turns around and has a son and he's righteous again, he's not going to be punished for his father's, but it's every man stands before me. That idea, I mean, Ezekiel 18 really blows that idea out. But he said, no, neither. Nobody. No, that's not, you got it wrong. Neither. Neither he nor his parents, but this, that the works of God should be made manifest in him. I must work the works of him that sent me while it's day. The night comes when no man can work, and as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Now, I personally believe there was probably a couple words that were spoken between verse 5 and verse 6. In fact, I think there's a phrase, I mean, I can't say dogmatically because it's not in here, okay? But it's something that I picture Jesus saying a lot, and this is one of those instances. I think he looked at his guys and said, watch this. Because look what he does next. When he'd thus spoken, he spat on the ground. That's spit. Past tense, spat. And he made clay of the spittle. And he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And then he said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. And he went his way, therefore, and washed and came seeing. He says, check this out. I think he did, personally. Because he didn't have to do this, okay? There are times when Jesus heals people, and someone will come to him, and he says, go your way, you know, your faith has made you whole, or go your way, it's as you've asked. Yeah, I mean, he just says it, and it happens, right? He's God, he can do whatever he wants. But he doesn't. In this particular instance, he... And of course, the blind guy's got to be... I mean, he's just sitting there with his hand out and hearing this conversation, and he's probably heard an answer that he hasn't heard before, because he's used to taking heat or being blamed for his problem. And all of a sudden, somebody... And he doesn't know who, he's blind, just people talking. One guy says, well, neither, but this was something that God did. And then he hears somebody spit. And then something being done in the dirt. And then he feels something on his face. And he's probably thinking, come on. I mean, I'm blind. What, you know, I just asked for something. You could have just said no. You could have just walked by. But you spit in my face. I mean, he spits on the ground. He makes mud. And then he smears it in the blind guy's face. And if you look at what he says to him, what does he say? Now go to the pool and wash. He doesn't say, go to the pool and wash and you'll get your sight. He doesn't say that. He just says, now go to the pool. Oh, that's nice. How mean is that? Not only do I get spit in my face, I have to stumble to the pool to wash myself. But do you notice that the guy goes and does it? Why would he do that? I think he does it because he heard something in that answer that made him realize he wasn't dealing with the average person here. See, Jesus did it this way, we'll see in a second, for a reason. I think he was still angry from having had that conversation with the religious leaders. He did get angry. You know that, right? It says in Mark chapter 3, when he was in the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and they brought in somebody with a messed up hand and stuck him in front of Jesus, embarrassing the guy, because they wanted to see Jesus heal him on the Sabbath day because they believed it was sinful for him to do any work on the Sabbath, and they would consider that work. So they used this guy to try to entrap Jesus. And it says in Mark chapter 3, he says unto them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath day or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they held their peace. They don't answer. And when he looked around about on them with anger, he was ticked. And being grieved for the hardness of their heart. He was both angry at their hard-heartedness, and he was also sad. It made him sad that these people who were supposed to be representing God actually were trying to use somebody in pain to get him. So I think Jesus is a little angry here. And so he says, well, check this out. And he spits, and he makes the clay, and he rubs it in the guy's eyes. So rather than just saying it, he actually did some physical stuff. In fact, exactly what he did was what gets him in trouble. And he says unto him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. That's what the name means, of Siloam. And he went his way, therefore, washed and came seeing. And the neighbors, therefore, and they which had seen him that was blind said, is this not he that sat and begged? Isn't that the guy? I mean, close your eyes and put your hands. Yeah, man, are you sure that's not the guy? And some said, well, yeah, that's him. And others said, well, it's like him, but he's got eyes now. I guess that's the difference. But he said, I'm he. Therefore, they said unto him, well, how were your eyes open? And he answered and said, well, a man that's called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes. I'm not going to ask about what the water was that made the clay. I'm just going to say it was clay. We'll just assume he used some water and it wasn't really spit. I didn't see it, so I don't know. And go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed and received sight. Now, you know, we hear Jesus. You guys know anybody named Jesus besides the Jesus of the Bible? Anybody know anyone named Jesus? I mean, there's some Jesus. If Missy's in Ajo near the Mexico border, and she probably knows a Jesus or two. But you don't know many Jesuses. But Jesus is just the Greek form of Joshua. And that was like as common a name as there was. So it's like, well, there was this guy, John Smith, and he made clay. I mean, he doesn't know Jesus from any other Joshua. There were probably dozens of Joshuas walking around. And so he said, well, there was this guy, Jesus, and he made, but I didn't see him because Jesus left. He just put the stuff in his eyes, told him to wash, and then left. And they say unto him, well, where is he? He said, I don't know. And they brought to the Pharisees him that was aforetime blind. So they bring this guy back to the people that Jesus was just arguing with. And it was, lo and behold, the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. See, it was a Sabbath day when you weren't supposed to do any work. Then again, the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. And he said unto them, he put clay upon my eyes, and I washed and do see. Well, therefore, said some of the Pharisees, this man's not of God because he doesn't keep the Sabbath day. See, their Sabbath day, the law said, don't do any work on the Sabbath. But that wasn't sufficient. They needed to know, well, what exactly is doing work? Because we got to know where the line is so that we can get right up to it, right? You got to know where the line is. So they had, with their tradition, defined what was work and what wasn't work, down to the minutest of details, things you could do, things you couldn't do. There was the Sabbath day journey. You could go so far on the Sabbath, like 1,000 paces, but if you went beyond that, you were going too far and you were working and breaking the law. Of course, they had done all other kinds of crazy things to circumvent the rules that they made, like, well, if before the Sabbath you tied a rope on your house that extended your house, it became part of your house, so then you could go 1,000 paces beyond the, or 100 paces, whatever it was, beyond the rope. You know, they had stuff like that. They had some crazy laws that said things like, you know, you're not allowed to harvest your field. You can't go out and rip up your crops on the Sabbath day. But they also had a law that said a woman couldn't look in a mirror on a Sabbath day, because she might see a gray hair. And we know what you'll do if you see a gray hair. You're going to pull it out, and you'd be harvesting, right? You couldn't pick your nose, literally. It's in the Mishnah, the Talmud. You can't pick your nose on the Sabbath day because you'd be bringing in a crop, you know? You can't. You couldn't, when you spit on the Sabbath day, you could spit on a rock. That was okay. You couldn't spit in the dirt, because if you spit in the dirt and it was like a loogie, it could roll and dig a little trench, and that would be plowing. You certainly couldn't make, you know, clay out of the spit, because that would be making bricks and that would be work. And so he picked two or three to get with one thing. Now, he could have done it anyway, but I think he said, no, let's do it this way, just to tick them off. Because you have to understand, Jesus had a real problem with stupid rules. He never broke the law. He kept God's law perfectly. He just had a problem with their stupid rules that weren't God's law. He says in Matthew 15, he called them hypocrites. And he said, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, this people draws nigh me with their mouth, but they honor me with their lips, but their heart's far from me. In vain they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. We're, you know, in the realm of the church, you have the high church and the low church. High church is one that is very formal, a lot of rituals, a lot of low church, very casual, no ritual. You probably can't tell where we fall in that scale. It tends to be on the lower side. We have our rituals too, you know. And everybody has their extra stuff. I mean, I was down at this home, the seaside home, and I'm doing these Bible studies every day. And the way the day would operate is you get up in the morning, they ring a bell, you get up in the morning, everybody has breakfast together. We'd come in the other room, set up some chairs. I'd do a 15-minute Bible study. Then we'd all head down to the beach and sit there all day. When you're done at the beach, you're covered with sand. It's in everything. You're covered with salt. And so you'd come back, and they had these outdoor showers that were, you know, boxed off. And you'd shower up. You'd have clothes in bins waiting for you. You'd shower up. You'd get cleaned off, and then you'd hang up your beach stuff, and then you'd be done for the day. And the next morning, you'd wake up, and you'd go through the same routine. So you take your shower at night. So when I wake up in the morning, my hair was a little longer than I had hoped it'd be, Sandra, when I was at, she cuts my hair, when I was at the retreat. So I'd wake up in the morning and I'd use a man's hair wash, which is to put on a hat, right? I mean, I just throw the baseball hat on, and that's as, look, now it's clean, now it's dirty, now it's clean, now, I mean, just stick the hat on because my hair's all, you know, sticking up and I don't want to offend anybody with it. Well, one of the ladies told me a couple days in that it kind of bothered her that I was wearing a hat when I was teaching a Bible study. And we're all sitting there in shorts and everything else. Everybody else has got a hat on, but me teaching a Bible study, because there is a verse that talks about a man praying or prophesying with his head covered, and it means something different than what you think there. But whatever the case, that was a problem for her. So I didn't wear a hat the rest of the week. And if she was less offended with my hair sticking straight up from the top of my head, then that's what I did, because it's a little thing, right? And I really want her to be able to receive what I'm saying, and what's the big deal if that's an issue for her? But by and large, we don't follow too many, you know. There's nothing wrong with having routines and everything. The problem is when you take something that is one of our rules or one of our preferences or one of our likes and we turn it into a law that everybody else has to follow. That's where it gets to be a problem. Jesus never put up with any of that. And so he specifically picks a couple different ones to tweak them with when healing this guy. And as soon as they hear that he made clay, it doesn't matter that there's a blind guy who can see. It matters that he spit in the dirt and he made mud. See what they say? This man's not of God because he doesn't keep the Sabbath day. And others said, well, how can a man that's a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them. And they say to the blind man again, well, what do you say of him? He that opened your eyes. Now, he's having this progressive revelation of who Jesus is. He started out by saying he's a man. Now he says he's a prophet. But the Jews didn't believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight. And they called the parents of him that had received. They get the blind guy's parents, and they ask them, saying, is this your son, who you say was born blind? How is it that he now sees? And his parents answered them and said, well, we know this is our son, and that he was born blind, but by what means he now sees, we don't know. Or who has opened his eyes, we know not. He's of age, ask him, he'll speak for himself. And it says, these words spoke his parents because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was the Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. See, because the rules, they had made the rules that said anybody who thinks anything that Jesus is, you know, the Messiah or anything like that, he's out of here. And they'd be, for them to be kicked out of the synagogue really means excommunicated. And if that happened, nobody in Jewish culture would have anything to do with them. They'd treat them like they were dead. So they would lose all of their friends, they would lose the rest of their family, they would lose everything, their livelihood, their ability to do business with other people, if they acknowledged Jesus. That was the cost to them for acknowledging Jesus, so they refused to give an answer. It always bugs me when churches manipulate that way, because it happens sometimes. Let's be honest, a lot of you who come here have friends who also come here because you're in fellowship. You guys, you know, you come in, you sing together, you pray together, you cry together, you worship together, you become friends and everything. Well, if I was one of those guys who suddenly got ticked at somebody and said, stay away from that one, he's in sin or whatever, and then all of their friends turned away. I mean, that's a lot of pressure on someone to toe the line if they think that I might, you know, take away all their friends. I don't do that, thank God. But I've seen it done, and it really bugs me when I do see it done. It shouldn't be that way. Well, that's what the religious leaders were doing here. They said, ask him yourself, because they were afraid. Verse 23, therefore said his parents, he's of age, ask him. Then again, they called a man that was blind. Now, I think Jesus picked this guy. He had groomed this guy with this personality for this particular moment. Because they call him again, and they say unto him, give God the praise. We know that this man's a sinner. In other words, don't credit it to Jesus. He's a sinful guy. You say that it was God, but don't say Jesus had anything to do with it. And he answers and says, well, whether he be a sinner or not, I don't know. But one thing I do know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. Now, I don't know your theological issues. I can only tell you I was blind and now I see. And see, this is like the best testimony ever. Well, your experience doesn't match up with my theology. Okay, I'm sorry about that. All I can tell you was I was a raging heathen loser and Jesus set me free and cleaned me up. That's it. It's tough to argue with that kind of testimony. You know, you can say what you want about this guy. He can see now, and he was blind before. Then said they to him again, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? And he's not afraid at all, because, you know, religion has had nothing to do with him, because everyone treated him as if he was a sinner, his parents was. He was unworthy. Obviously, he had God's wrath on him. That's why he had something wrong with him. So they had no room for him before this event. He's certainly not going to suck up to him now to try to get into their good graces. He answers him and says, well, I've told you already, and you didn't hear. Why would you hear it again? Will you also be his disciples? So what, you want to start following him? That's why you're asking me all these questions? You want to be one of Jesus' followers? Wrong thing to say to them. Then they reviled him. Literally, they cursed him out. That's not sinful, by the way, to curse out somebody on the Sabbath. It's only sinful to, you know, make mud out of spit. And said, well, you're his disciple, but we're Moses' disciple. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we don't know where he's from. And the man answered and said unto him, well, isn't that a marvelous thing? You don't know where he's from, and yet he's opened my eyes. And then he gives them a little Bible lesson. He says, now we know, this is the blind guy who probably wasn't even allowed into the places of worship. He's telling them a little lesson. We know that God doesn't hear sinners, but if any man be a worshiper of God and does his will, him he'll hear. And since the world began, it's not been heard that any man opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not of God, he could do nothing. You know, it says in Psalm 66, if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord won't hear me. It says in Isaiah 59, your iniquities have separated between you and your God. Your sins, he's hid his face from you. He won't hear. But then it says in Isaiah 29, talking about the Messiah, and in that day, the deaf shall hear the words of the book. The eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity. It says in Isaiah 35, speaking about when the Messiah comes, say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense, and he will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened. The ears of the deaf will be unstopped. He says, that's a sign. Don't you guys know what the Old Testament says? And you go through the Old Testament, there's no record of anyone receiving their sight who was born blind. Never happened before. Never happened. And then Jesus does it. And he says, huh, isn't that something? And you don't know where he's from. Well, they answered and said unto him, you are altogether born in sin, and you're teaching us. And they threw him out. Have you ever been in that place where religion had just no place for you and they threw you out? You're in a good place, because look what happens. Jesus heard they chucked him out, and when he'd found him, he said unto him, Jesus went and looked for him. If you, because of a relationship with Jesus, get thrown out of religion, you're in a good spot, because Jesus will come. And he said to him, do you believe on the Son of God? And he answered and says, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? You tell me who he is, I'll believe. You open my eyes, I'll believe whatever you say. And Jesus said unto him, you've both seen him, and it's he that talks with you. And he said, this guy's a fast learner, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Jesus receives worship from this man. He doesn't say, oh, no, don't worship me. Worship God only. He doesn't say that. Angels say that. Other people should say that, but Jesus is God. He receives worship from him. And Jesus says, for judgment I'm come into this world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind. And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words and said unto him, Are we blind also? And he said, Well, if you were blind, you'd have no sin. You'd have an excuse. But now you say, We see, therefore your sin remains. Because you claim to see and you don't. I guess I go through that for a couple reasons. One, to say, Jesus, he was a lover of people. He was merciful. And I think one thing that annoyed him more than anything else was people doing stupid or mean things in the name of religion. You can read through the scripture and you'll never see him yelling at a prostitute. You'll never see him reviling a thief. The only people he ever gets mad at are religious people who act stupidly, act like hypocrites. It grieves him. Second thing is he's compassionate, he's mercy. He didn't come to affix blame. He came to seek and save that which was lost. I mean, that's what it says in John. He didn't come to condemn the world. The world was condemned already. But God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son, that whosoever would believe in him should not perish but have everlasting life. This world stinks sometimes. I like that song that Bobby sang at the end there. It's not how it should be. You see a blind person, you should realize this is not how it is. I spent the week at the shore, and one of the families I got to know, they have 5, 6 kids, I forget how many there were, but the last couple they've adopted. The youngest one, Leo, is fed through a feeding tube and has seizures and other things, so we had a lot to talk about. Their other kids, Jonathan, was adopted from China. He's got one leg, and playing on the beach. That kid was a machine. You should see him move. I mean, he was fast. It grieved me because he was really fast. You know, he has a set of those crutches with the things that go around his hands, and he can go on one leg real well, but he's like a man on fire when he's using his crutches, and very athletic, you can tell by watching him. Unfortunately, he wasn't allowed to play soccer at the school he goes to because his crutches gave him an unfair advantage, apparently, over the other kids. You think, are you kidding me? Do you have a number for the school? I mean, really, it just makes me angry, you know? But I know the Lord has a special place in his heart, and he doesn't do anything for no reason, even though I don't always know in fact, most of the time it seems like I don't know what the reason is. I do know it has a reason. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much, Father, that you get as grieved at hard hearts as more so than we do. Lord, help us to be angry and sin not, like your word says. Lord, help us to be mad at the things that make you mad, and Lord, to be compassionate and love the people that you love. Lord, I pray that you would help us to see with your eyes and trust you completely. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Grace and peace, guys.